We begin the current daf Masechet Ksubos, daf Yud Tes. We begin on the second line from the top of the Amud, but the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf and from the previous Mishnah, where the Mishnah said that if witnesses come and say that this is Ksav Yudein Huzeh, the way we're verifying what's called Kiyum Shtaris of this document is through their own testimony that this is their handwriting, thus making it a kosher shtar. If they then qualify that statement, and say that, however, so then they're going to be believed based on the principle of what's called Pesha Asa or Pesha Hitter. The only way you know this is kosher is based on our testimony. Well, then believe us when we say that it's actually not kosher, because although we're saying that we were the witnesses, but we weren't valid witnesses. That's the opinion of the Chacham. However, the Gemara quoted a Braisa of Remeir that he holds Enam on Lepaislai. They're actually not believed to invalidate the shtar by qualifying it. Now, that the Gemara asked, we can understand regarding when they said Psuli Edusayinu or Ketanameinu that they will not be believed, as the Gemara explained from the bottom of previous daf going on to the top of our Amid, where there's a chazakah which denies what they're claiming. And that is because since they're agreeing that the halva happened, the loan happened, the sale happened, we're agreeing that everything happened. We just were not valid witnesses, thus making the document not valid. But there's a presumption that's saying that you're wrong. Because if a malva or a lekach would go through the effort of creating a shtar, he's going to make sure he has kosher witnesses. He's not going to create a document, get witnesses, and they're going to be ketanim? They're going to be psulim, eved? No, for sure not. And therefore, if you're agreeing that there really was such a loan or a sale, must be that you were kosher. And if we don't buy that part of your sentence that you're saying, that you were psulim. What the Gemara asked, regarding the first of the three cases, which was anus meyinu, why there would they not be believed? By ketanim and psulim, we understand why they wouldn't be believed. Because the person that's doing the sale or the lender will make sure that they're kosher witnesses. But here, if they're claiming that we were forced, as we explained, because of there was danger to our life, there's no chazaka saying that what they said was wrong. And there could be that there was such a situation where one of the parties was forcing them to write a document, which they're saying that, yes, we wrote it, but it was wrong because we only wrote it because it was false. Why don't you say HaPesha Asa, HaPesha Hitter? They're verifying it, and if they could verify them, believe them when they're saying, but yes, it's just because it was danger to our life, but really the whole thing never happened. Why shouldn't they believe? And that's where our current daf continues to explain why, according to Reb Meir, in that case, would the aid of them not be believed. So Amar Rav Chisdei says, Ksav Reb Meir, holds, Eidim she'amru lahem chismu sheker v'al tahargu, witnesses that are told, look, either you sign this document falsely, or you're going to be killed. Actually, Remeah holds Yehargu v'al yichas mashaker. They actually should be killed and should not sign falsely. And therefore, that explains the opinion of Remeah. When they say anis anus mayinu, even machmas nefashas, which we explained in the previous daf, obviously machmas mamun, they definitely not believe. Because ein adam meisim atzmo rasha, you're saying you were forced because of financial reasons. Well, that's still immoral and it's usur, and therefore we don't believe you because you cannot make yourself into a wicked person not believed regarding testimony that's incriminating himself. Now the chiddush the Gemara is saying according to a mayor is even when you say anus mayinu machmas nefashos, you're still incriminating yourself because actually a person should not go ahead and sign falsely. Rather he should give up his life. And the fact that they didn't, obviously, and they're saying that that's why we signed, they're actually not going to be believed. That's going to be Mesim Asmei Rasha, because you should have given up your life. And the fact that you didn't, you're obviously trying to incriminate yourself, and that's why you're not believed. And that explains Reb Meir's opinion, why he holds, and there's no Hapesha Asa in all these three cases, where he argues on the opinion in our Mishnah, because he says, by Nusameinu, you'll have this element of that actually you're Mesim Asmei Rasha, so we don't believe it. And regarding Psulim and Ketanim, the reason why we don't believe in there is because that's opposing a chazaka, that the one who's buying or the one who's lending will make sure that the witnesses are kosher valid witnesses. Now that the Gemara asks, only Rabba. So Rabba says to Rav Chisda, wait a second, Hashta, Ilu Asala Kamon Lamluchi, if a person would come now and ask us regarding a certain situation, he says, look, there's someone that has a gun to my head, he wants that I should sign. If not, he's going to kill me. What do I do? Amin lahu ziluch chasumu v'loy tiktalu. And he says, I don't understand. Rav asked Rav Chisda. He says, what would we tell him? We tell him, sign. Don't get killed. And the reason is because the Amamarik, because the Master says, there's nothing that stands in the way about taking care of someone's life. Ella, rather, there's only the three cardinal sins. Afeidus kechavim, idol worship, vigila arayis, immoral relationships, v'shvichas dam belvad, and just murder. So, hashta, the chasmus, and now when he did sign, amrin lehu amaychas misu, we say to him, why did you sign? How can you say this, that he's incriminating himself? Why are you incriminating yourself? Because you signed falsely. What do you mean signed falsely? That was what he was supposed to do. He's supposed to sign and not get killed. So why should he not be believed? Now, based on our pesha, also pesha hit, you're saying because he's incriminating. How could that be incriminating? The halacha is, if he would come and ask us, we would tell him to go ahead and sign and not to get killed. So rather, Rava says, the reason Rav Meir is, in a specific case, that he says when they're saying anus meyinu and katana meyinu and psul edzo yinu, that we will not believe the qualification of the witnesses. And the reason is because toma kedrav hun amar Rav. Damar hun amar Rav. Rav says that Moida, if the borrower agrees, Bishtar Shekasavai, that this document was written based on his authority, that's he authored that the witnesses should sign that this is actually true, that he's borrowing this money from this Malva, then the lender does not Tsarach Lekaimai, does not need to go ahead and verify the signatures of the witnesses that are signed in the document. And the reason is because the borrower is not believed anymore to say that he paid up what the loan is said in this document. And moreover, the chiddush of this is that we don't say, what do you mean? Hapesha asa hu hapesha hitir, what do you mean? If the lever contends the authority of this document, he says that this was forged, then the malva, the lender, has a responsibility to do kim shtaris, to verify the document, either by having the witnesses themselves come ahead and say this is our signature, or other similar documentation, or other witnesses that recognize them. Now here, it's only because of the loiva's admission that it is a document that he's saying that you don't have to be mekayim it, because obviously he's agreeing to it. But he's saying, look, the only reason why it's valid is based on my testimony. But believe me that I'm saying that it's paid up. And that the chiddush is that you don't say that's called pesh asa peshet. And the reason is because once the leiva says that it was a shtar kosher, he's admitting that he authored it to be written, so that gives the validity to the document. Now that he's saying that I paid it, he's not believed because it's in the hand of the lender. That's morale, that takes away from his pesha asa, because if it would be true like you're saying that you paid it up, well then why is it in the hand of the lender? You should have it. That's what happens when it's paid up, it goes to the hand of the lender. It goes to the hand of the borrower. Now, similarly, the Gemara wants to say, Rav Meir, when he said that we're not going to believe the witnesses to invalidate the document, when although they're saying that it was their writing, thus validating it, and then they're saying, however, but you should just know, psul meyinu, ketan meyinu, anus meyinu, will not believe, and the reason is because it's told about a case when it's moida loy v'shekasavai, when the borrower admitted to writing it. Now we don't need any more the edim to verify it, and therefore, since it's not based on their testimony that's validating the document, there's no pesha asa anymore. They can't say, oh, wait a second, look, the reason why you're validating this document, there's no other documentation with our signatures, there's no one else that recognizes our signatures, it's based on our testimony. So then, based on pesha asa, pesha had to believe us that we were anusim, we were gitanim, we were psulim. On that, the Gemara answers that no, the reason why Rav Meir argues is because it's talking about a case when the leiva is maida, that he offered this document to be written. Once the bar himself agrees to it, we don't need any more the verification of the witnesses. And therefore, although the witnesses are qualifying to say that they were puzzled, it doesn't make a difference because they don't have any more the power of a pesha asa who a pesha hitta, because the validity of the document was already based on the borrower's own admission that he authored the document to be written. And just like he's not believing the pesha asa, and moreover, for sure, the edim are not going to be, because it's not even their own testimony that's validating the authorship of this document. So again, that's the, according to Rava, his interpretation of Rav Meir, why he says in all the three cases that we will not believe the edim to say anusim, psulim, ketanim, because again, we don't need their verification, so there's no pesha asa in any one of the cases. Now, Gufa, the Gemara quotes this that we just introduced, the Amar Avinu Rav. He says, Rav Huna said the name of Rav, that a document that the Leivad Mitzvah was written, then they Tzarech L'Kayma. Then you don't have to go ahead and validate the document. He himself is admitting to it, and it's the only one that the liability is for him, and he's admitting, so you don't have to go ahead and verify it. Now, Amalei Rav Nachman said to Rav Huna, Kanava Genuvei Lamlach. Why do you have to steal? In other words, you're stealing, in a sense, by saying your words as if an anonymous statement, like as if there's not a machlokes between the rabbim, which is the chachamim, and the yachid individual, meaning Reb Meir. In other words, seemingly why you're doing this, just making a blanket statement, is because you don't want anyone to say what you're saying is wrong, for people to argue on you because you're saying like a yachid. You don't say that. But why? Yisrilach Reb Meir, if you hold like Reb Meir, which we just explained in the previous Gemara, as Rava just interpreted, that the understanding of Reb Meir is based on the testament, on the halacha of Maidi B'shtash HaGesavah Ein Tzarech Hamav L'Kaimai. So then, Ein Halacha Reb Meir, say Halacha like Reb Meir. Don't just say it like a blanket statement as if no one argues on this. It seems clearly the way Rav interpreted that this actually Machlek is Reb Meir and the Chacham, and actually that the Chacham do not agree to this principle, because they hold that even when Maidi Halei V'shek Savai, that the witnesses would be believed. And obviously that there is still an element of Tzarech L'Kaimai. So why just saying it? Say at least Halacha is like Reb Meir. Say everyone knows you're going like a Yachid. So Amalei, so Rav Hun responded to Rav Nachman, Umar Heches Virle, and how do you hold? What? In other words, you seem to be saying that it's as if it's not so simple what I'm saying. What do you hold as Halacha B'moid B'shtar Shrek Savoy? So Amalei said actually, that ki asu l'kamon l'dino, when there are litigants that come to us to court, meaning when the lenders come bringing their documents, amrina lahu, we tell them, in other words, my custom is to tell the lenders that bring the documents that don't have the witnesses with them, that are pre-authorizing it, I tell them, zilu kai mishtaraychu, go ahead and verify your documentation, in other words, go find witnesses to verify the witnesses that are signed in it, v'chus l'dino, then come down to court, and the reason is because if not, even if the borrower is going to admit that it was written, he could still state the claim in court that he paid it. In other words, like the Rabbanan who argued Reb Meir, and that's what Rav Huna was saying. That's what Rav Nachman was saying to Rav Huna, that don't just say it as a blanket statement because that's just like Reb Meir. And actually, we tell people like the Rabbanan that you better go ahead and verify it because actually, Moedu Haleva, B'shtar Shaksavai, Hamalva still needs Tzarech L'Kaimai, and that is the labor could still make the claim of Parati that I paid it up. And the Gemara continues on a similar theme now regarding the a person's claim to invalidate the document. So I'm Rav Yehuda Marav. Ha'imer Shtar Amanahuze. If somebody says that this document, although it looks like a legitimate document, it's actually what's called a Shtar Amana. Amana comes from the word of Amen, of that trustworthy. What this means is that actually no loan actually happened. Rather, what happened is that the borrower, or potential borrower more like that, he wrote this document saying that I borrowed $100 from this person and he gave it to the lender. Why did he do that? Because in case he needed, he wanted to be able to have it automatic because it takes time to find the cipher, a scribe, and witnesses, and the courts might not be open and he might need quick loan. So what he does is he says, look, here, I'm writing this for you. You hold on to this. And I trust you. That's why it's called Shtar Amana. I trust you that you're not going to come to court and claim this money from me unless you actually lend it to me. We're friends. But I know you want to make sure you're going to get your money from me. So here's this Shtar, this document of a loan. But it's no loan ever happened. It's just I trust you that you'll use it when I need to borrow from you. So now if someone comes at a later point in time and says, this document, this is not a real document. He can't come and collect with this. It's Shtar Amana. It was only written for the future, I trusted him, and obviously now the trust is broken. But on that, Rav says, ain't an amen. For someone to come at a later point in time and say that that's really what the document is, no loan ever happened, and there are witnesses, everything is there, he's not believed to say that's what it was. Now, on that, the Gemara asked, the Ka'amar Man, who exactly is saying that this Shtar, which seems like a full, legitimate, valid document, is not really? It's really Shtar Amana. As the Gemara asks, if it's the borrower who wants to make this claim, well, pshita, it's obvious we won't believe him. Kol kamina, is there such an idea, would that even make sense, that if you have witnesses signed in the document, that of course you can go ahead and have them be verified, the witnesses being verified, and that's it. In other words, Shtar Amana is not denying the validity of the document. In other words, everything is true. The witnesses signed, everything is just, but it never happened. So on that, the Gemara's question is, what do we have to say that he's not believed? Of course he's not believed. If you verify the testimony and the signature of the witnesses, it's a valid document in halacha. Why would we think that he can mistake such a claim? Failed to come a lot malvan if you're saying the case that the lender himself says that this document, I know it looks like I have a document like this, but it's not true because he never really borrowed, he just gave it to me just in case. Of course, Tavar Lav Bracha. Let blessing come upon his head that he's agreeing that this is not true. What would be, why wouldn't he believe to say that? Of course he's believed. He's saying that never happened. El Dekamri Edim, so what are you going to say? It's the witnesses that say that. The witnesses who signed are saying that it never really happened. We were just all in this just in case he had to borrow from him, so we went ahead and signed it. On that, the Gemara asks, Meman of Shachar doesn't make sense. If these witnesses themselves, if their own signatures are verified from a different place, from other documentation, or from other witnesses, obviously the witnesses would not be believed to say it was Amana, because as the principle of Einu Chazer Magid, once they said their testimony, they cannot go ahead and add stipulation or change the verification of what they had written in the documentation, because you could only say it one time. Now, the only time they could do that is if this is part of a testimonial that they're making, let's say when they're doing Kim Shtars. But if their verification is somewhere else, we don't need them to verify it. Of course, they cannot go ahead and say that it was Amana. And if there is no verification for their signatures from anywhere else but themselves, so then the question actually is, why wouldn't they be believed? That's the principle of what we call Pesha Aso, Pesha Hitter. Since the verification, what we call Kim Shtaris, only happens through them, so if within that same statement they go ahead and say, to make it one Haggadah, that but we it was Amana, and the truth is the loan never happened, so why shouldn't we believe them? So how does this make sense? If it's the Leiva, obviously we don't believe him. If the Malva, obviously we should believe him. And then it's the witnesses, well then it depends. If it's Ksav Yodim Yitzim Makam Achar, then of course we shouldn't believe them. And if it's not Yitzim Makam Achar, then we should believe them. So now the Gemara says, Simin Va'ash, the mnemonic to recall the following three Amayram, is the Simin of Ba'ash, which is, the vase is Amar Rava. Rava says, and each one of them says actually one of the three different approaches that the Gemara said is difficult to understand. Rava says, Lo'ilm dekamar loiva. Actually, it's the borrower who's staking the claim that it was Amana. And then the question then becomes, so what's the chiddush? Of course he's not believed. We have a regular document that's verified. So that the Gemara says, Gudrav Huna. And the chiddush is, and this is what we had quoted previously in the Gemara, was for like the halacha of Rav Huna. The Amar Rav Huna Rav, he says, if a borrower admits regarding a document that it was written and he authored it to be written, then you don't even have to verify the signatures of the witnesses in the document. Now, Rav Yehuda's teaching is similar chiddush, that a borrower that says that I wrote it and I gave it to the malva, but, yes, I did that, but it was only because I trusted him, it was a shtar mana. And that is what Rabbi Huda's teaching in the name of Rav, that the lender doesn't even have to go ahead and bring different witnesses to testify regarding the signatures because the borrower is not believed to invalidate it. And the reason is because people don't do that. They don't write and give over documentation to another person without actually taking out a loan. No one's believed to say that Shtar Aman who's it. And therefore, yes, the Gemara in the question said it can't be the borrower because, of course, if you're going to verify it, yes, so the Leiva could definitely stake a claim, but once we verify the signatures, what's the Chiddush? Of course he's not believed to say Shtar Amana. The Chiddush the Gemara is saying is that he can't, we don't even have to verify the signatures because once he agrees that it was written, he can't stake a claim anymore. In the Tzarech L'Kaima, he can't even say Pirati, he can't say Amana, and therefore, that's the Chiddush of the Leiva that you don't even have to be Mekaima. The next Amayra, the Aleph, Abaya Amar, he says, Lo'ilam da'amr malvay. So the case is talking about that it's the lender that's saying it's shtar amana, and he's not believed. Now that would definitely be difficult to understand. The lender who he's saying, I don't want to collect with this because it's actually not a true document. Why shouldn't he be believed? As we said, it should be tavei lav bracha. It's kekoin shechav la'achirim. It's that when he makes this admission that he's, so to speak, saying, that he's saying that, no, this is not a real document. He doesn't owe me the money. He gave it to me. I know it's amongst my documents, a bill of things that are owed me, but he only did it in case that he's going to have to borrow from me. Now, it's told about a case where this is going to be a liability and create a loss for this lender's own creditors. He has creditors that that are coming to collect by him. Now, he's a debtor, and he has no other assets to pay them up with. Now, what these his lenders want to collect from his, so to speak, borrower. Now, by him saying that it's not a real loan, it never happened, he's creating a loss for his own lenders because now they can't go in and collect from his, so to speak, borrower. Now, that's talking about what's called a kedreb nosin, which is commonly known as what's called shibud kedreb nosin. What does that mean? They're telling, like, learn the Brisa. Reb Nosson, he says, minayin l'noisha b'chaveri man, how do we know in halacha regarding if someone is running after another person with a loan that he owns him? B'chaveri b'chaveroi, and that friend has someone else that he owes money to. So you have, let's say, Reuben, Shimon, and Levi, where Reuben owes Shimon money and Shimon owes Levi money. Minayin shemaitzin mizeh b'noisha l'noisha. How do we know that we could take from Levi and Reuben and go ahead and take from that one and go all the way to the other one that's owed? We don't have to go through the direct channels of who you actually borrowed from. Tamaloyma, that's what the Pasuk teaches in Bamidbar, v'nosan la'asher ashamloy, that you give it to the one that you're responsible to, that you're liable to. It doesn't say to the one that you borrowed from, rather to the one that you're liable. And now the Gemara in Baba Kama explains, Daf Kuf Yod Amud Aleph, that the word asher means karen, the principal, whoever the principal is owed to. Now, what's called Shibud Reb Nosson is the lien of Reb Nosson, which is that since you borrowed from him and he borrowed from, and he borrowed from you, which is the train, you don't have to go through the medium, you can go to the other one. And therefore, the Gemara is saying that the Chiddush of Reb Huda is actually we do not believe the Malva, because people don't do that. People don't do a Shtar Mana. Now, yes, if you were the only one, if you were the lender and you had no creditors, then yeah, so fine, you could just not collect. But if it's creating a loss to someone else, you're not believed to say it wasn't an actual loan. It was a loan, and therefore your creditors could collect from the person that you have a document borrowed from you because of the claim of Shtar Mana is not believable. And in this case, where it's going to create a loss to other people, the Malva himself is not believed to say that it actually wasn't a loan. Now, the Shin, Rav Ashi, he says, La'ilam the Kamri Eidim. He says the third option. Actually, it's talking about where it's the witnesses that are saying Shtar Mana was it. And actually, there's no other verification of this document besides their own testimony that they're saying it's Ksav Yudein Huzeh. Now, with the comrade of Maila Mehemni, and now the question then was, then why are they not believed? Based on the principle of Pesha Asa, who are Pesha Hitter, if they're the one that is verifying it, they could definitely create problems with it and say, but yes, with Shtar Mana. The reason why they're not believed is Kedek Rav Kahana, like Rav Kahana says. I'm Rav Kahana. It's forbidden for a person to hold on to this, what we call shtar mana, in his house. If there was no real loan, if you're this future lender that he's hoping one day you'll lend him, you can't hold on to such a document. The reason is, like it says the Pasuk in Eve, Pasuk says, "V'altashkin b'olecha avla." It cannot reside in your tent, in your house, injustice. Now, as we continue on to Amud Beis, that And therefore, what Rav Kahana is saying, that the Shtar Mana is injustice. It's something that's wrong, and it could create financial problems because there was no real loan, but it looks like a real document. They're not allowed to hold on to that. Now, Va'am Rav Sheshet B'Ridar V'Yidi, he says, Shema Menod Rav Kahana, from that halacha Rav Kahana, that he says you cannot, as a lender, hold on to such a false document. So, moreover, you get the halacha that we're interpreting now of what is Rav Ashi saying in the halacha of Rav Yehuda, that Eidim Sha'amru, if witnesses say Aman Hayu Duvereinu, that our words were only based on trust, but there was no real loan, Ein Nemanim, they're not believed. We see that from Rav Kahana's halacha, my time, what's the reason? The reason is because Kivin the Avlahu, just like Rav Kahana described, that this is inappropriate, it's injustice to have such a document, so Ha'avla Lechasmi, witnesses do not sign on injustice. Now, and if they do say we did, which is what they're claiming now, we don't believe them to incriminate themselves, which is the halacha of Ein Odem Es Matzmei Rasha. And that's why you don't say a Pesha Asa or Pesha Hiter. Because although, yes, that's generally what we do say, but you don't say that when it's, let's say, Anus Meinu Machmas Momen, when they're incriminating themselves. And that is what the Gemara is saying. Saying Amana is the same type of incrimination because that's something that's wrong, it's an injustice, and that's why you can't hold on to it. And therefore the witnesses are not believed to say when they say that it was Amana. Now continuing on expounding on that pasuk that was introduced in Eiv, the Gemara brings the Amr B'Shub Ben Levi, Asalei Lo'odim Sheyesh Ashtar Peru B'Teich Beis. It's forbidden for a person to hold on to a paid-up document in his house, Mishum Shenemel, as it says in that pasuk Niyev, Al Tishkin Balacha Avla, don't hold on, don't let it reside in your tent, injustice, and that's injustice, because if it was paid up already, you should not be holding on to that document, because you might go ahead and collect with it again. Now, B'marava Mishmei Derav Amri, in Eretz Yisrael, the name of Rav, they said, starting from the beginning of that pasuk Niyev, it says, Im Oven B'yadcha, if there's perversion in your hand, Sahar Chikeyu, distance that from yourself. Now, the way they interpret the name of Rav, Zeshtar Amana, that's a document of Amana, which is if it's going to be in the future, but again, that's perversion because that's wrong, and that, there was no such loan. Ushtar Pasim, it also refers to Shtar Pasim, which the root of the word Pas is the word of Pius, of seducing, of persuading what the Gemara, where elsewhere it's, that's explained that if someone persuaded his friend to lend him a document, now what does it mean to lend you a document? That he wants him to write that this friend of his owes him, let's say, $1 million. Now, why would someone want his friend to lend him, quote, lend him such a document, but not that he's ever going to collect with it? It's because he wants to impress upon others how wealthy he really is. Look at the loans, the liens that he has. Now, but it's not, it never really happened, but he's just asking his friend to write it so that he could show others as if he has somewhere to rely on as secondary finances. Now, that's wrong, because there is no such document. Holding on to such a document is injustice, just like it is by Shtar Amana. Now, the second half of the pasuk, which we had been interpreting, when it says, V'atishkin ba'alecha avla, don't let it reside in your tent, this thing that's wrong, zeshtar perua. That's a reference to a paid-up document. Now, Tosis explains, actually, why each half of the pasuk refers to a different type of documentation. When it says in the pasuk, oven b'yotcha harchikehu, that's a reference to shtar pasim, shtar mona, the word oven is something that is perversion, which is that meaning it's patently, intrinsically wrong. It was always false because it never happened. There was never a loan by the shtar pasim, shtar mona. Now, when it says in the pasuk, v'atishkim alecha avla, that's a paid-up document, where meaning avla sounds like right now it's a wrongdoing, but it wasn't intrinsically bad. It's not oven. It's not perverse. It's just injustice. But meaning that originally it was truth, because it was a real document, just now that it's paid up, one should not go ahead and hold on to it. So therefore, all these types of documentations are wrong things to hold on to. Now, that was in Eretz Yisrael that they say the name of Rav. But originally we had two different interpretations of Rav Kahane and Shimon Levi in the second half of the pasuk. Now the Gemara explains how that would spell itself out. In other words, Manda Amar Shtar Peru according to Shimon Levi, that he says, regarding the second half of the pasuk, that's calling such a thing of avla, not to hold on to that's a reference to a paid-up document. Well, koshkin shtar mana, for sure he would hold that it's wrong to hold on to a shtar mana that never happened, where that was originally in avla. It never happened. For sure, that would be wrong to hold on to. But uman da amar, but according to Rav Kahana, that says that shtar mana, that what does it mean? Avla, it's a reference to a shtar mana, which we use Rav Kahana's halacha to explain what we're talking about in our sugya, where the Edom are not believe, because that's Mashiach Satzman. But he said that's what avla means, avla shtar peru aloi. But regarding a paid-up document, he would say that that's not a violation of the pasig of al tishkin balacha avla. And the reason is, because the zimnin de mashi le apshite de safri, because sometimes people hold on to a paid-up document for a legitimate reason, which is for the coins of the scribe. In other words, there's a responsibility when someone wants to take out a loan, to the lender's gracious enough to give him the loan. But besides that, they have to write up the documentation so that he could collect with that. The borrower incurs that cost of giving the payment for the scribe. Now, sometimes he not only has no money, because that's why he's borrowing, but he doesn't have money to even pay the scribe. So the malva, the lender, advances that money. So at the time when the loan is paid up, he goes and then collects for the amount of the scribe too. And moreover, if he pays up the loan but he doesn't have the money for paying for the scribe, he holds on to the documentation. Now, therefore, there are times when holding on to a paid up document will not be an avla, because there's rightfully so that you have a reason, because the expense of the document was not paid up yet. So therefore, even when it's not in that type of situation, it's not going to be a clear-cut avla, that will not be included in the pasuk of holding on to a shtar perua. And that's what Rav Kahana says, it's only by a shtar mana, but actually a shtar perua he holds will not be a violation of it being called an avla. Now continuing on this pasuk, the Gemara says, Itma, we learned, sefer, a scroll of either Tanakh, meaning Torah, Nevi'im, or Ksuvim, she'ena muga, that's not corrected from the mistakes in that scroll, Omer Bami says, Ad lama yoim mutalasha isa. Up until 30 days, you could hold on to it because you didn't get a chance yet to fix it. But if it's already post 30 days, you can't hold on to it. It's wrong for that to be in your house. Like it says in the Pasuk, Al tishka malacha avli, you can't have residing in your house something that's injustice. In other words, having a sefer that's wrong, that's mistaken, then you might learn it and you might learn wrong halachas. It's a wrong thing to hold on to in one's house. Now going back to the topic of our Mishnah, the Gemara says, Amrav Nachman, Edim, witnesses that are signed in a document, Sh'amru, that they say, Amana hayudivareinu, that our words were Amana, meaning, as we explained before, that no loan ever happened. We just wrote it for the borrower that when he's going to have to borrow from him, so what he does now is he already, and there's a need for this element, which, as Rashi explains, that he already now is Meshabit his Nechasim, where even that for it, that he's going to borrow at a later point in time, that he's saying that right now my property are, you have a lien on all my property. Now the reason for this purpose is because even if, let's say, you get by the problem of a mana, there's a different problem, because if the loan didn't happen now and they're writing the document now and it actually only happened later time, that's what's called shtar muktim. It's a predated document because the loan happened only 4 weeks later, but it was written 4 weeks earlier. Now you wouldn't be able to collect anyway from the properties because it's a shtar muktim, which is inappropriate, and therefore you can't collect with that as a shtar. Now, so on that, the Rashi gives the explanation that the witnesses are saying that no, that wasn't a problem because he actually was mishabed as nechazim. He's allowed to put a lien on his properties to that person, but there actually was no loan. It was only in case that it was going to happen. So the witnesses are saying that, look, we know we signed and everyone was in on it. No one was forced to do anything. But it's only based on the future. Now he's coming to collect with it. We just want you to know, although we really signed, but no loan ever happened. On that, Rav Nachman says, Einemon. They're not believed, as we said before, because you're being marshias atzmon. They are, according to everybody, that's going to be problematic. Now, if they say that our words were based on a notice, what does that mean? So, for example, if let's say that this document is a document of a sale. Now, if the witnesses that signed in it come and say that before the sale happened, the seller gave us notice and he showed us that he's only doing it because he's being forced. And we saw that this is something he's being forced into, but he couldn't get out of it. So he gave notice to us to know that, look, I need you to sign because I'm being forced to make this document of sale. But just know, and I'm going to need your testimony at a later point in time, maybe, that this is not real. I'm not really interested in selling. I'm just being forced to do it. So that, if the witnesses come at a later point in time and want to point that out and say that it's not really a sale because there was a notice given beforehand, in them on them, they're not believed, as Rashi explains it, because of the principle was called lo'osi al peh u'mor le'lashtar. A later oral declaration of these witnesses cannot weaken their testimony in the document. In other words, if you look at the documentation as it is, even if they're verifying it, but their testimony there is saying that this is a valid sale because that's what their words are saying in this written document. Now, when they come later and say an oral testimony to say that it's not really true because there was some coercion over there and that we had noticed beforehand, since that there wasn't written in the documentation form, they're not believed at a later point in time to undo that. Now, but Mar Bar Vashyam, he argues, and he says, regarding the first half of regarding Amana, there they're not believed, as we said before, because that is, as our previous Gemara said, Amana is Marshia Satzman, as Rav Ashi had said in interpretation of Rav Yehuda's Halacha, they're not believed to say that because you're incriminating yourself. But when they say that there was Maida, then they are actually believed. So the Gemara is my time. What's the difference between those two Halachas? So the Gemara explains. Hi, regarding when they make the claim that there was notice given to them before him, which is called Maida, Nitin, it's given for the witnesses, Lichtev, to write this document. Now, why? Because they're saving the one who's being forced from his difficult situation, meaning who knows what they were going to do to this guy if he doesn't, quote, make the sale. So they're helping him out. Now, but when it comes later, when he's safe now, then they could say that, look, you know, we signed, but we didn't do anything wrong. We helped him out. Now we want you to know that it really wasn't a sale. He was actually forced into it. So they're believed to do that. But v'hai, but regarding when they make the claim that it was a mana, le'nitein li'kasev, that was never allowed to be written. That is, as we said before, that's called avla. Meaning there was no one being forced, no, there was no coercion. Again, there was a favor to the leiva, actually, in case he's going to have to borrow it, give it to the malva. Now, when witnesses come later and say that we signed on such a document, they're incriminating themselves. And as we said before, in Adam Mesem Atzem Rasha, a person cannot incriminate himself, and that's what he's doing when he says, when the witnesses say that it was Amana, and that's why there they're not believed, but Bamayda, where there's no Mesem Atzem Rasha, there they are believed, and that we don't say that the Mora Al Pel Lishtar, that you can't have a later oral testimony and undo what they had done in the written documentation. Now, Baimenei Rav Ram Nachman, so continuing on this discussion, Rava asked from Rav Nachman, who we just quoted before, that he said that both Maida and Amana, the witnesses are not believed to say that's what the type of documentation was. So the question is, what's with a different, similar type of a case? What's with Tanai Hoy Devarenu? Let's say the witnesses say that, yes, it's true, there was such a sale, and we're not denying that. But it was sold on condition that the buyer will take care of these types of conditions. Now, we didn't see that he fulfilled those conditions. And actually, this person himself is saying that it's true. The seller is saying he didn't fulfill the conditions, and therefore it's not sold. So the question is, mahu, what would be the halacha over there? As the Gemara explains the question. What's the reason why you say, Rav Nachman, by when the Edom say that it was Maidah, that we had noticed that he's being forced, or a mana that it was only made for a future, but again, both of these are claiming that They're not true sales or loans, and therefore they want to disqualify it. But you said that they're not believed. Why? Because with their later oral testimony, they're trying to undo what their written testimony had in the document. And as we said before, that their later oral declaration could not undo their written testimony. And therefore, here also, when they're adding stipulations, when they're trying to say that, yes, if you just looked at our written documentation, what we wrote over there, it would be valid of a sale, and he'd be able to take this what he bought, or this lender will be able to collect with it. Now, but we want to go ahead and say that now we're uprooting it because we're saying he didn't fulfill the Tanai. Well, you're uprooting the documentation. Your later oral stipulations, declarations cannot undo what was written in the documentation, and therefore they wouldn't be believed. Oidilma, or maybe, this case is different by Tanai, because what they're saying is not uprooting the documentation. They agree that the document is true. This just that there's something that you don't realize, there was something else, there was a condition between them. And therefore, regarding this Tanai, regarding when they say there was conditions, Milsachriti, that's something else, that's a different testimonial. Now, by default, the document will be uprooted at a later point in time when the purchaser doesn't fulfill his condition, but it's not being Marulei Lishtara. It's not that my oral documentation is uprooting what I wrote in the documentation. That when you're saying a mano or my da, that is contradicting what you wrote. If you're writing, you're obviously saying that it is a valid document, which is obviously saying that it's not a mano, that it's not my da. Although there are possibilities which you're trying to qualify to say that there were conditions, but without anything else, the documentation says that it wasn't like that. So you can't come and uproot that. But Tanai, that's something else. We're not denying anything. It's not contradicting anything in the document. It's just saying, but there was also a condition which wasn't fulfilled. So is it the same as a Maida Amana, or is it different? So Amalei Rav Nachman responds to Rav. He says that ki asu l'kaman, when purchasers come in front of us, ledina, to court, that they have their own witnesses who say that, yes, you bought this, but there was conditions, samrin lehu, we tell the purchaser, zilu kaima tanaichu, go ahead and fulfill your conditions that you had with the owner, and then mechus ledina, then come down to court, if he's still not giving you the land. And the reason is because, as Rav Nachman is responding to him, that actually the witnesses are believed. It's different than Maidama and Amana. They are believed to say that Tanai Hayu Devarenu, that there was conditions attached with, because that's not contradicting their written testimony. It's just adding a different piece. Now, related to this halacha, the Gemara says that, let's say, Eid Oymer Tanai. Let's say there's two witnesses signed on the document, And one witness comes later and says that, but there was a condition. The Edomer ended tonight. And another witness says, no, there was no condition. What are you talking about? We were there. We signed. There was no conditions. So what's the halacha? So Amar Papa, he says, look, Tavayu Bishtor Ma'al Yukum Asadi. Both witnesses are testifying that this is a valid, truthful document. And as it's written, it seems like that there was no conditions. And they signed in it. In other words, nothing in the documentation says that there was conditions. Now the Hayde Kamer Tanai Havalechad. Now the one who's saying but that there was a condition is only one witness, Vein Dvarv Shalechad. And you cannot have the testimony of one witness to be believed to uproot B'Mokum Shnayim when there's two witnesses who are verifying their signature that's in there. In other words, because they're both verifying that this is true. One wants to come ahead and say that there was a Tanai. It's Echad B'Mokum Shnayim. And that's not belief. And therefore, if Papa says that there he won't be believed to say that there has to be a condition to be fulfilled. Now that Maskev L'Rav Huna B'Rid Rav Yeshua, he asks, wait a second. Ihachi, if that's the case, that the way you're describing the logistics of what is it that's happening when this one person wants to go ahead and say there was a condition that he's not believed, and the reason why you explained was because they said testimony regarding their handwriting that was signed. Now, you said that you made each one in the document as if they're saying in the document that there's no conditions. And therefore, you said that it's as if there's two witnesses who are themselves in the document saying that there's no condition. And the last witness, who's only one of the two, who later orally wants to say that there was a condition, you're saying it's as if it's Echad B'Mokum Shnayim. So on that he says, if that's the case, afilo tarvayu nami, then what do you mean? Then even as, which was Rav Nachman's halacha before, that even when there's two people, the two witnesses themselves, when both of them say that there was conditions, we should not believe them. And the reason is, based on the logic that you just described, because since they testify regarding their signatures, that they're validating it, they're b'mekayim it, they're saying it is what it is, it's true. And therefore, but what's written is saying that there's no Tanai, because that's all, we don't see any Tanai in the document. Now, when they later come ahead and say that Tanai ha'yudivrein, that there is a condition, well, then that should be considered magidim v'chezim magidim, which is the halachic problem of Kiv and Shehigid. Once you said a testimony, and you're saying that as if their testimony is saying that there's no conditions. Now, when they come back a later point in time and say there were conditions, the way you're describing sounds like that it's not a different Edus. Because you're saying that the Edus itself, intrinsic in the document, is saying that there's no conditions. And that's why the later one person is one B'Mokum Shnayim. So then why did Rav Nachman say that you have to go ahead and fulfill the conditions? Why the two witnesses themselves should not be believed? And the reason is because they themselves said, so to speak, in the document, that there is no condition. When they themselves come later and say that there is conditions, that's Kibin Shehigash Shuvayin HaChazimaki. You can't change what you already said once before. And the way Rav Papa is describing the logic, that was said in the document that there is no tonight. Now, so rather, Elo, Rav Huna B'Rid Rav Yeshua says, what you have to say, obviously, is that when they're verifying their signatures in the document, that was only when they're verifying it. Now, since what's called Teich Kedei Dibur, within the amount of time it takes to say Shalom Alecha Rebbe, those few words, they went ahead and said, but there was condition over there. So, Arminim, we say, Hani Lime'ekar Sadesai Kosu. What are they coming to do? They're coming to say that, yes, this is our signature, but we didn't sign just carte blanche. We signed that he should go ahead and fulfill the condition. Now, since, as we explained before in Rav Nachman, that a condition is something that's addendum, it's not part of the actual document itself. It's not uprooting it, it's not directly contradicting it. Because again, if it was directly contradicting it, then there would be a problem of Kivin Shehigat Shuv in the Chazamaga. It's not. It's only at a later point in time when he doesn't fulfill the condition that then, okay, by default, he won't be able to utilize and collect with that document. But that's why it's not similar to Meidah and Amana, because there you're directly contradicting, because intrinsic in what you wrote is saying that it's not Meidah and Amana. But we said that Tanai is different. Now, but one thing we see is that it's obviously its own testimonial. The idea of when they say Tanai is not a contradiction. That there never was written in the document that there was no Tanai to say that they're contradicting it. Now, therefore, when two witnesses come and say, it's Ksav Yodein, who said it is our handwriting, it is our signature, but Tanai Hayu, we said that we believe them, and the reason is because that element of Tanai does not contradict that was written in the document, and since they're now only saying it now, when they're verifying, they have Pesha Asa, Pesha Hitta, they could undo their verification with saying it's Tanai. So Hanami, so Rav Huna B'Yishua says to Rav Papa, so the same thing is over here, when one person concludes, when they both come at a later point in time to verify their signature, and they're doing Ki Mishtaris, and they're saying Ksavi Dein Huzeh, when this guy comes and says that Tanai Hava, one of the people, Lemeker Sadusai, to uproot his chasima, his signature, his testimony, Ka'asi, that's what he's coming to do, to say that I only signed with that purpose for this person to fulfill his condition. Now, since, as we explained, that's an addendum, the concept of Tanai, is not, was never mentioned in the document, neither for or against. Now, so by default, the document will by itself be uprooted. And therefore, essentially, what we have in the document, we only have one witness in the document. We don't have Echad B'Mokum Shnayim, Rav Huna says. We only have one, because the way it became a document is only through Kim Shtaris. Kim Shtaris is only when they're saying this now. Now, within those Techidei Dibur, he's saying, yes, I'm verifying it, but just know that it was a Tanai when I had signed in it. Now, what that is saying is that it's like some of this quasi-contradiction. It's not contradicting it to say, Kivin Sheket Shuvrei Nechazem Agad, but it is contradicting it in the sense to say that you don't see me in the document, because the whole me in the document was only based on condition. And I could tell you that now, because in the document I never said that there was no condition, and therefore I could say this now, and since I'm saying it Terkedei Dipper, then believe me on what's called Pesha Aso Pesha Hitte, because I'm verifying it, but I'm telling you the verification was only based on tonight. And therefore, Rav Huna B'Yishua says, one witness shouldn't be any different than two witnesses, because if you say it won't work by one, it shouldn't work by two either. And again, that's because based on the logic of that, we're saying that Tanai is a different thing, milsachritihi, than what was written in the document. And the Gemara concludes, halacha does follow, like Rav Huna B'Yishua, that actually not only would two witnesses be believed to say Tanai, but even one, because it's not one b'makom shnayim, it'd only be echad b'makom echad, because he almost, so to speak, removes himself virtually from the document, because that doesn't contradict what was written in the document, to say that he's what he's saying now, which is that it is a condition, and therefore he's believed to say that now, and as we said, because that's davar achro. Now, continuing on this sugya, the Gemara is a term about learning the brisa. Shnayim chasum al shtar v'meso. This is a slightly different type than what we were discussing up until now from the topic of our Mishnah, where if you have two witnesses signed on a document and they died, now ubo shnayim min ashuk v'amru. Now two witnesses come from elsewhere and they say. Now, as we explained before, there's a few different ways of verifying the document, meaning specifically the chasimis, the signatures that are on there to verify that they're true, because it's the witnesses that essentially make the validity of the testimonial. It could be like we were saying before in our Mishnah, where the witnesses themselves are the ones that are verifying it, and then they could then go ahead based on Pesha Aser and say, but, qualifying it, and saying, but we were Psalm, but we were Ketan, but we were Anusim, thus invalidating it. Now we're talking about different, but similar, which is, they're dead already. Now the ones who are verifying it, a different verification, other two witnesses who recognize their signatures, they come and say, yes, Yadanu Shiksav Biyadmu, we know this is their signature. So they're thus being Mekayim the Shtar. Avol, but now they qualify it. But we saw what happened. Anusim Hayu, we know they were forced. Ketanim Hayu, we know at that time they were minors. Psuliyedes Hayu, they were invalid witnesses at that time. They were servants. They were slaves. One of these types of Psuliyedes. So the Brisa says, Harel Naman, they're also believed. It's the same principle. Whoever is Peshas or whoever is verifying it can then qualify it and do Peshet and say, but it was possible. But if there are other witnesses that it was their signature, we don't need these witnesses. There's no Pesha Aser. Or if there was these signatures were documented somewhere else. For example, Mishtar Shekarl of Irim, from a document that there were some rumors about the validity of the document. In other words, that the claimant, the one that the claim was against, wanted to invalidate it. And he says, what are you talking about? I never borrowed money. There's witnesses. It must be forged. But v'hochzik bebezdin, and then so Bezdin went to that document and verified it, and they found that it was true witnesses and it was true testimonial. So again, so that's two different verifications that we don't need these witnesses anymore, either because we have two other witnesses saying that they recognize it, or because there's a different document that had been tested and then verified. Now we know that this is always the signatures that we can contrast and compare. If ever we find signatures that match it, it's automatically good. Then ein elu nemanim. Then these later witnesses are not believed, as we said, because now there is no pesha asa who pesha hitter, because the only reason why we believed them was because they're the ones that are verifying, so they could undo it, but they're not verifying it because we have other verification and that it's authorizing it, and therefore they're not believed to say that it's possible. But the Gemara asks an elementary question. So what do? We collect with this document that has other verification, but we have these two witnesses that saying, but they were ketanim at the time, or psulim arnus, and we collect. Kibishtar ma'alya, like a regular document, that's good. But vamai, why? At least let it be trei v'trei ninu. Let it be a contradiction between two different witnesses. You have the two witnesses that are signed in the document, where we verify from other sources, yes, that they're saying, quote, saying, they're dead, but they're saying that this loan happened, this sale happened. But we have two other witnesses that are saying that they're wrong. In other words, that they were puzzled at the time. So at least let it be trey, and that you can't collect with it because you have a contradiction between two sets of witnesses. So though, yes, they cannot totally undo it, but at least let it be that it's they're contradicting that, and therefore it should be status quo, stalemate, that you can't use it. Maybe you don't rip it up, but you don't use it. So that the Gemara says, Rav Sheshes, Zaysem S, well, we could conclude from this brisa, obviously what's called gishpart, what you can then follow through from based on the halacha of the brisa, with the question that we're asking, that hakhasha, which hakhasha means to say that when there's a contradictory testimony, where you have one witness saying, let's say, that there was a loan, and another one saying that there wasn't, or let's say one set of witnesses are saying that that this is true, that it happened because we are kosher witnesses, another one saying that it didn't happen because you're not kosher witnesses, then actually tchilas hazamahi, it's actually the beginning of hazamah. Now, there's two types of ways that a second pair of witnesses could contradict the first pair. Either with a kasha, which they're not incriminating the first pair, they're saying that the loan happened. They're saying that it didn't happen. They're saying a parallel that are contradictory statements. Then there's hazama. Hazama is that the second pair of witnesses are not saying anything necessarily regarding what's happening in court in the sense of did the loan happen, did the sale happen, no. All they're saying is that how could you have said testimony that loan happened or that thing happened, but you were with us at the time. So they're not even talking about the actual situation, but they're incriminating the witnesses by saying that you couldn't have said it because you were with us. Obviously, you're lying. Now, so on that, Rav Sheshes says that obviously that you could see on the hierarchy that Hakasha is the beginning of Hazama, although Hazama is definitely a different principle, but he's saying that it's in that line of halachas. What that means is, as the Gemara continues on top of Chafam and Alf, and that is ukeshe'em she'em azim nasa'edim el b'fneim. And just like Hazama does not work to incriminate those witnesses only if they're there. In other words, for example, halacha of Hazama is whatever those witnesses wanted to require of whoever they're claiming and helping the plaintiff for. Let's say it was a monetary law. They wanted even, let's say they were saying testimony someone was machal Shabbos and get skila. So that the Eidei Hazama themselves get that same punishment. Now, that halacha is only whatever punishment you're trying to create that the second pair of witnesses are trying to now incriminate the first pair of witnesses to say that what they were trying to get that person to have to get, that they're getting now, whether they get killed or whether they have to now pay that money themselves. The Torah says, in general, what's called v'huad bebalav, which is that the testimony you say regarding someone that you're trying to have to create some type of liability, whether his life or monetary payment, as the Gemara explains in Baba Kama Kuf Yud Beis, that it's Yavah Bal Hashar V'Yamad Al Shar, meaning you have to say a testimony to the Bebalav, that, let's say, that's told by Shar Shanogach, when the ox gores. So if we're trying to say that there's a liability for your ox that gores, he has to be in court. You can't incriminate someone, you can't create a liability for someone if he's not there. As I said, who had Bebalav, the testimony has to be in him. So the same thing applies for Hazama. If you want to do Hazama to a first pair of witnesses to say that now they're liable, they have to be there. So now is that what the Gemara is saying is kach emachish mesaidim. So what Rav Sheshes is saying, you could conclude, is obviously Akasha is similar to that. It's tchilas hazama, and that is so too you can't even refute the testimony of witnesses, even to just be mevatel their edus, elabeth name, only if they're there. And therefore, since they're dead, so that's why it's not trey. Just like you can't do hazam if they're not there, you can't do hakhash if they're not there. And that's why we can go ahead and collect with this document, because you're right, it should be trey, but you can't have trey. You can't have a second peer being makash the first one, unless if they're there, and they're not there because they're dead. And that's why, since we're having verification from somewhere else and there's no pesha aser, so therefore you could collect with such a document, and these other edim are not nemanim to invalidate the document. Now, Adam Le Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman asks to Rav Sheshes, does that really make sense? Ilo hava kamon umakishon lahu, had these first pair of witnesses who signed in the document been here, and the second pair who they're coming now, maybe years later, whatever it is, and they would have refuted them had they been alive, hava hakrosha, that would be a refutation enough at least to make trey that you can't collect with the first pair of witnesses' testimony. And v'lav mashgichin buhu, and we wouldn't even pay attention to the witnesses in the document to collect based on what they're saying, because it would be trey. Dehavi le'edis mukheshes, because it would be what's called the edis that is being contradicted by another pair of witnesses. So now hash the lesson, who now that they're not around, the ilu hava lekama, now, and there is even another piece over here. Had they been here, Dilma Hava Maidlu, maybe they would agree. Maybe they would say, you're right. We were katana, we were stupid, we didn't know what we were doing, we were minors and we signed. Maybe we were psul, maybe they would agree. So Dilma Hava Maidlu and Mehemni? And so now you want to believe them? Meaning, even when they would be around, and they would say that, no, it's not true, they would try to refute the second pair, we wouldn't believe them because they would be Aedes Mukheshes. Now that they're dead, where, again, maybe they would even agree to the second pair. You want to say that we believe them? How can you say such a thing when, of course, there's going to be a kasha, even if they're not around? It's Elam Rav Nachman. Rather, Rav Nachman says, essentially agreeing with the question. You're right. Uki trei lahade trei. You do put two against two. V'uki memoina b'cheskes mari. And what you do is that the money stays in the presumptive state of the owner that has it now, which, in the case that we're talking about, let's say is the chazak of the loiv of the borrower. The borrower could hold on to his money. Or, for example, let's say if it's a case of a sale of land, so then the seller, who up until now, the chazaka of who was the owner of the land was the seller, he gets to hold on to it. Now, as Rashi explains what Rav Nachman's interpreting in the Braisa, when the Braisa said that the second pair of witnesses are not nemanim, where if they want to say that the witnesses were assigned were anusim or psulim or ketanim, that doesn't mean, as the questioner had made it sound like, oh, they're not believed, and thus, since it's being validated from somewhere else, that you could collect with such a document. No. All they're saying is that you don't tear up the document. Now, what that means is, if, for example, if let's say the lender or the purchaser will go, well, you can't have with karka, but let's say the lender will go out and grab money from the borrower. And then the borrower comes in claiming, says that, give me back my money. What do you mean? You didn't have any proof in with this document because it's trey. We actually will not take the money away from the malva. And the reason is because we always say, look, we have no way of proving anyway. We have the witnesses in the document who say that there was a loan. We have witnesses later on who say that they were psulim, thus contradicting them. And therefore, the halacha will always be mamayna b'cheskes heichakai. The money stays in the presumptive state where it is right now. It stays status quo. We have no way of proving either way. Now, so yes, if nothing was done yet, so then the leiva could hold on to his money. This that we said that we don't believe the later ones is just that we don't believe them to go ahead and tear up the document, invalidate the document. Now, because if we did that, if we tore up the document, if the malva would go ahead and grab money from the leiva, we'd say, what are you doing? And we would force them to give back the money. We have no document. Halachically, we see it as nothing. But we're saying that, no, they're not believed to rip it up, but it's not like, as we had asked in the question, that means that you could collect with it. Of course, you can't collect with it because it's trey, but it means to say that whoever's holding onto the money gets to hold it, and we cannot make them remove it. So until something's done, the leiva gets hold onto it, but if the malva grabs it away, we can't. The leiva has no right, authority to grab it back from him, because now he's b'cheskes kai. He's the one that's holding onto it, and we can't say that he's wrong either, because maybe he's right. Because this is the contradiction of trey, where it stays becheskes mare. But again, that's the what we're learning from that is that they just can't rip up the document. But it is something at least of what's called a suffig, and therefore that's the halacha that we're saying. Not that like Rav Sheshes had attempted to say that you actually could go ahead and collect with it. You can't collect with it, but it still has halacha ramifications as we described.